And welcome. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We have a new domain site that I want to share with you. It is now, and we're going to make it as simple as possible for you, www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. That's right, www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live. We've got it hooked up now, so you can use your media player or whatever. You can download podcasts, listen to commentaries, past shows, whatever you like. It's nice to have you with us tonight. Have you checked out the new scaredmonkeys.com? Make sure you go and do that too. Tonight on the Dana Pretzer Show here on satellite W3957, kickradio.com, or of course scaredmonkeysradio.com, we have life coach Devlin Steele. He's the founder of the leading self-improvement social meeting place on the web called toolstolife.com. And Coach Steele and I are going to talk about Lindsay Lohan and other celebrities and their lack of control over themselves and their impulsive behavior. After that, lawyer, TV columnist, crime specialist, and author of a new book, called And Justice for Some. I love the title of that. An expose of lawyers and judges who let dangerous criminals go free. Wendy Murphy will be here. Then Al Garza, the National Executive Director of the Minuteman Project, on the new border fence bill. We're going to talk about that, plus those Border Patrol agents Compion and Ramos. I want to get an update on what's going on with them. And then Reza Joe, he's the father of a missing girl, Donna Joe, will be here to talk about the search for his daughter and some of the roadblocks that he's running into. That's here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back with life coach Devlin Steele. Nice to have you. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio, satellite W3957, kickradio.com, and wherever else you can pick us up. Have you been watching all the news coverage of Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears, Paris Hilton, you name it? I know some of us get sick of it, but if you turn on any of the cable news channels, it's there, and obviously there's an interest in it. Lindsay Lohan's been charged with DUI again and had drugs. You know, we've talked about this on the show before with some of the celebrities that were child stars. Stanley Livingston from My Three Sons comes to mind. We interviewed him about what it was like to be a star back in his era compared to what it is now. But today we're seeing celebrities dangling babies over balconies, tearing their hotel rooms apart, going in and out of rehab like you or I go out of a local grocery store. Outrageous behavior, to say the least. You know, it's almost an arrogance. I'm better than you. The rules don't apply to me. I brought on tonight life coach Devlin Steele. He's the founder of the leading self-improvement social meeting place on the web, toolstolife.com. Again, that's toolstolife.com. And he and I are going to talk for about the next 15, 20 minutes to try and connect the dots to see why these celebrities are doing what they're doing. Good evening, sir. How are you?
I am great, Dana. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for coming on the program. What's going on with these celebrities? You know, like I mentioned, I'm not sure if you heard my intro or not. I've done the child star bit on my program before, where I've talked to child stars from the 50s and 60s, and obviously they had their issues, but we never saw it until recently. I'm thinking in the last 4 or 5 years where these so-called stars, these Lindsay Lohans and such, are just running amok, and every time we turn the news on, it's them.
Well, there are a lot of different parts of this issue. I mean, one is, well, why do we get so upset over these celebrities? And I think that comes from that we would think that if we had that fame, that fortune, the success, the beauty, that our life would be better. And so I think it makes us think, what is happiness and how do you create happiness? And, you know, that's something that we have to stop doing, is looking at these celebrities as where happiness would come from if we had what they had.
And that's the one of the big issues. I've done daily commentaries on this just recently about the role model aspect of this, about the young teenage daughters or young teenage girls that are growing up, and boys that look at these quote-unquote stars and use them as role models, yet it seems like today in society we don't have consequences for bad behavior. Paris Hilton doing however many days in jail was a international event, and a lot argue she was overpunished for driving under the influence. What's wrong with society today, and is the fact that we don't have consequences for Joe Sixpack out on the street the reason why Joe Millionaire out on the street gets away for what he does?
Well, accountability is a very important issue. I mean, we all have things that we want to change in our life, Dana. And, you know, and I think we're growing up in a society that wants such, works on such impulse behavior, instant gratification, instantly wanting to get rich, instantly wanting that perfect diet, the secret to success, the secret to life. And we grow up in this fast-paced society where, you know, what's interesting is Lindsay Lohan, although her behavior is outrageous, I would challenge you to go to a college campus on a Saturday night and not find far worse or equal outrageous behavior. They're just not under the cameras. So I think there's a prevalent problem within our culture today of not being accountable and not really taking control of our life and looking for that impulse, looking for that next high constantly.
A lot of these celebrities will say that the paparazzi, the so-called freedom that they want to have that's taken away by the scrutiny, the public scrutiny that's upon them, is why they are having the problems they're having. But really, when it comes right down to it, they crave any sort of publicity, don't they?
Yeah, the paparazzi is not responsible for their out-of-control behavior. I mean, that's not founded. But what also you have to realize is that as a whole, you know, I work and live here in Santa Monica, Hollywood, and have a lot of celebrity type clients and people in the movie industry. And, you know, we wouldn't be able to make movies if there weren't people who showed up on the set and did their work and, you know, had a functioning lifestyle. I wouldn't find Tom Hanks doing this type of behavior. So, you know, and as a whole, this isn't all of Hollywood. This is a percentage of it. And it's a lot to do with the younger ones. And this comes back to growing up without accountability, growing up in this, you know, impulse, needing that high constantly. I mean, you're talking about people who are doing drugs and drinking. And once you get to that level where you're not respecting yourself, you're not respecting anything else, Dana.
Yeah, that's true. That's for sure. And this so-called brat pack mentality seems to capture the imagination of many of us out there, myself included. I take a look at TMZ.com and other things to see what we can talk about on the program. But why the public fascination so much? When you see the type of stories, especially cable news coverage that we see, yet some of the tragedies just before I came on there in Minnesota, the road collapsing and all the mayhem that's going on there, yet we'll have that 5 or 10 or 15 minutes of coverage of the Hollywood starlet or whoever on the air. Why is the public so fascinated with this, Coach?
Well, I think we like train wrecks. I mean, come on, look at reality TV today.
Yeah.
You know, we like seeing these train wrecks in personalities, and it just fascinates us as a culture, and we really need to start, and it's the media also. Come on, Nicole Richie gets convicted for her DUI, and Diane Sawyer books her the same day.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that telling everybody?
Well, it tells everybody that it's a mixed-up world that we're living in right now. I have teenagers in the house, and one of the programs that they love to sit and watch, and I sit back in the wings and take a look and scratch my head and walk away is something called Big Brother, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, but it sort of brings everyone's faux pas, self-consciousness, everything out into the open on this television program. And when you talk about impulsive behavior or things like that, this is it quintessential on TV. Have you seen the program, and what are your thoughts on it, and what is that doing to children like mine, the 16 and 17 year olds that are fascinated by seeing these, well, I'm going to say it, freaks on TV talking about their lives?
Well, you see, you're giving these freaks on TV their 15 minutes of fame. So I think what we're doing is imprinting that this behavior is what brings fame, what brings attention, and people are craving that type of attention now. They're wanting to get on these shows, so they don't even see that type of behavior as negative attention anymore. You know, you have Barry Bonds now about to break the record, and what's interesting about it is the steroid use, it doesn't even scare me as far as the professional athletes, but what we're seeing now is a trend in our young men, boys, using steroids for looks, to look good, just like in the 70s and 80s, the trend of women and young girls.
Are you still
thinking on society and training our youth what beauty is, what behavior is? And I think we're giving a very bad message.
Let's talk about that quick fix and tie it into your website, toolstolife.com. Again, you talk about the quick diet, the six-pack abs, the pressure that's put on people, the young girls, the young guys every day to have that look to them, the get-rich-quick schemes that are out there. You know, if there was any truth to any of the spam email that you get 50 times a day, well, anyway, that's a whole other show for a whole other time. Let's talk about that and tie into your website somewhat.
Well, I'm an anomaly because, first of all, I'm not selling anything. My website's completely free, but I looked at self-help, and, you know, self-help in America is $12 billion industry.
Wow.
And yet we're getting heavier, people, divorce rate's going up, job satisfaction is going down, savings is going down, we're taking more pills for everything you can imagine. And so there's a big disconnect. Obviously, these programs aren't working, and these promises they make you, the great abs, the great diet, the great financial success, the romance success, isn't coming true. And the reason for that is because there's no quick fix to life. And just like you got this radio show, you had to work at it. You had to go through the stages. If you want to get in shape, you have to go to the gym. You have to eat right. You have to put work into your life, your relationships, your finances. Tools to Life is a program that actually gives you a checklist and daily work, and is a combination between a MySpace, a social media website, with a self-development program. So now, instead of spending all this time on the internet with no purpose and nothing coming out of it, you can be in a social media network where people are supporting you, and you can be doing something beneficial to your life and actually creating positive changes if you want to work at it.
That's the key word, is if you want it. And people that want it, they want it yesterday. They want to be able to take that pill that they see advertised and in 3 days lose all this weight, or have the gizmo that you see on the shopping channel at 4 o'clock in the morning because you can't sleep because you've taken too much medication, that you roll up and down your stomach twice and you'll get that six-pack set of abs. The difference between that and what you're offering is, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that the person is going to use the technology that I'm looking at. I'm looking at a computer screen here right now, plus use their own self-want to benefit themselves.
Yeah, it's a program that gives you videos, it gives you audios, it gives you exercises, reading, and then what happens is, unlike other self-help that you read and they say, great ideas, but how do you actually put it into your life? You print a checklist of actual activity you do every day. And if you follow the program day by day, it's a roadmap to changing your behavior. And what's great about it is that you're not alone in the process. You can communicate with a whole network of people who will give you support. And the changes that we are seeing on the site is amazing. And it's everything I've been working towards for 15 years. And it's really quite gratifying to see it happening. And yes, you have to work at it. You know, when my clients come to see me, the first thing I tell them is, when they tell me what they want, I tell them, no, you don't. And they get very upset because they say, that's why I'm here and that's why I'm paying you. And I say, no, you're paying me because you want me to make this happen for you. Because if that's what you really wanted, think about it, Dana. Anything you've really ever wanted in your life, haven't you done what you needed to do to get it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Let's talk about, and I'm not trying to be flippant here, relapse or falling off the wagon, so to speak, losing that 25 pounds or going into the rehab center and trying to conquer that addiction, yet in 6 months you're right back at it again. How much of a battle is that, I guess, the program versus the human mind and want and desire?
Well, it's a combination of many different things. You know, what we are as a society is a symptom-oriented society. We attack symptoms. And when you talk about that diet, weight is a symptom. The cause to weight is how you're thinking. Because what are you thinking about when you're on a diet? I can't wait till I lose the weight so I can eat what I want and stop exercising so much.
That's
so
true.
95% of all people that go on a diet regain the weight within a year, usually.
Yeah.
So the cause is always how we think. And until you change how you think, listen, New Year's Eve doesn't get you drunk. You pick up the glass. Everything in your life is preceded by a thought. And until you learn how to change your thought process, your thoughts are always going to lead you back into the same action, and that same action is going to give you the same results.
Tomorrow your telephone rings, you pick it up, and Lindsay Lohan's on the other end. She says, Coach, what can I do? I'm at the bottom. I can't get any more screwed up than what I am right now. I want to straighten out myself and be a role model, excuse the dopey term, for others. What are you going to tell her?
Well, I mean, I would call her in and I would do an assessment. And in the process, I would give her an opportunity, because it's not my place not to give someone an opportunity. But I fire clients. Because I'm about success. I'm about people doing the work to get things done. And I would put her on a program of mental rehabilitation, of thought process, of taking control of her thoughts, of gaining back self-control. Because the more self-control you have, the more action you can take that will be positive. As you do, you build self-esteem. You know, as you do anything positive, if I go to the gym, what happens? I feel good about myself. As I feel good about myself, I have more self-control. I can go to the gym again. I don't feel good about myself, and I'm an alcoholic, and I take a drink. What happens when I take a drink? My self-esteem goes down. Therefore, my self-control goes down. I take another drink. It's a whole process, Dana. You know, and it's involved in really getting to know the client and getting them to work and taking control back of their life. But it takes time and it takes effort. And I would have to determine if that was what she, again, like we talked about, really wanted. Because if she did, she can do it. Anybody can do it if they really want it.
That's so true. That's so true. Again, the website is toolstolife.com. And life coach Devlin Steele has been with us this evening. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Dana.
We'll have you on again soon. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back with Wendy Murphy, the author of the new book, And Justice for Some. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. With us online is Wendy Murphy, author of the new book, And Justice for Some. I love that title. An expose of the lawyers and judges who let dangerous criminals go free. Now, we talked about this a couple of shows back. Mahamou Kana, I don't know if I'm saying that right, was freed after 9 counts of rape and sex abuse charges are dismissed by Judge Catherine Savage for a lack of a Liberian Vi dialect interpreter, cited as the reason for denial of a speedy trial. Wendy Murphy is a cable news contributor, law professor, former DA, and always a good guest to have on the program. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Dana. Good to be with you again.
Nice to have you. What's going on with Judge Catherine Savage? Is this something where both the prosecution and the judge dropped the ball?
It's a hard one for me to answer because I haven't heard anything about the judge that would lead me to believe she was doing something improper. You know, she doesn't have a reputation or a history that you can point to and say, this is why she does it. She's got a soft spot for people from Liberia. This guy was someone who was granted asylum some years ago. Liberia is not the best place in the world to grow up, and perhaps she has a soft spot that we just don't know about. But
right.
Here's the thing. She dismissed very serious charges. There was a 1-year-old and a 7-year-old little little kids involved. What he did to them, it was literally rape in the most grotesque form you can imagine, and it was repeated over the course of a year. And the sad thing is, this judge basically said, well, because we can't find an interpreter in a specific enough period of time to satisfy his speedy trial rights, I have no choice but to dismiss the charges. I think that's where she went wrong for two reasons. Number one, it's not entirely clear to me that the guy needs a Liberian interpreter, and I think it's a fraud on the court, from what I can tell, because the guy spoke fluent English at the time he was arrested when he spoke to police and gave statements. He spoke fluent English to the reporters who called him after the case was dismissed, and they asked him how he felt about it. He was only too happy to comply and describe himself as elated, and had no trouble understanding the reporters. He spoke fluent English when he was commanding the child to be obedient to his sexual perversions. So there's really no evidence, Dana, that the guy even needs a Liberian interpreter. Frankly, he probably would need an interpreter for the Liberian interpreter because he appears to speak primarily English. What I read, Fox News uncovered some of this, is that he only lived in Liberia for a very small period of time when he was young. He moved to Guyana, where he lived for much of his childhood, where they speak English. And then he came to this country where he went to high school and college and spoke English. He's lived here for a long time. He's in his 40s. So the idea that he needed an interpreter seems absurd on its face, and the court should have been better about figuring the truth of that claim out. The way they figured out that he needed an interpreter, the judge, not this particular judge, Savage, but another judge, sent a psychologist to interview the guy and determined through that psychologist's conversation that he needed an interpreter, and I had to laugh when I heard that because I'm not exactly sure how a psychologist figures that out.
Yeah.
You know, if you do ask a question that's Freudian in English and seems that he gazes off instead of answering, I just have no respect for any judge who thinks that's the way you figure out whether somebody can understand English well enough to participate in a criminal trial. He didn't ever request an interpreter in order to communicate with his defense counsel prior to trial, which is a telltale sign that he was more than capable of understanding English. And so that's one big, big issue in this case, is that I think this is a big fraud on the court. I think it's a very serious problem across the country that defense counsel ask for interpreters when they don't need them. It's expensive. I think one of the reports on this in the Maryland case said that the state had spent $1 million in 2006 of taxpayer money, $1 million on interpreters. And in my experience as a prosecutor, 8 out of 10 times it wasn't necessary. So it's just a way of burdening the system needlessly for the purpose of strategically delaying and what I call expensifying. I made that one up. But I do call it the expensification strategy. If you make it expensive, naturally the prosecutor's going to have a tougher time prosecuting as many criminals as they'd like to. And, I find that strategy just simply offensive because the poor people who really can't speak English need those resources. Yeah. And when you spread them out 8 out of 10 times to the people who don't need them, then the ones who really need them can't have them, at least can't have them as readily. So that's a big problem. The second point is, it wasn't the prosecutor's fault that they couldn't find somebody who spoke this obscure Liberian dialect. It was the judge's responsibility to find an interpreter. It is always the court's job to find an interpreter, not the prosecutor's job. So the prosecutor was helping, but the fact that they didn't succeed is not the prosecutor's fault. And you're only supposed to dismiss a case on speedy trial grounds to punish the prosecutor for their bad behavior. This was a case where it was the court's, and I'm not even calling it bad behavior, it was the court's inability to find an obscure interpreter that caused much of the delay, although there were several that were found, and it looks like there wasn't that much energy put into finding these interpreters because the Washington Post found 3, 4, or 5, I forget what the number was, literally in one day when the story broke. So I'm not sure it was that difficult. But the point is, unless it's the prosecutor's fault, you're not supposed to dismiss the case. The cases are very clear that the right to a speedy trial is important, but it's not absolute. It has to bend and give way in the face of legitimate systemic needs, like the court couldn't find an obscure interpreter, so those days are excluded. You know, the speedy trial clock, let's say, I think it was 180 days under Maryland law, he had to have his trial. There are all kinds of what we call excludable periods and tolling provisions that kick in, and one of them is if it's reasonable that the court needs a delay, you just cut that out, or you toll the ticking of the clock, and the court didn't do that. It sounds like this was sort of a rush to the end game needlessly, and that's why the prosecutor appealed, Dana. The prosecutor appealed basically on the theory that it's not their fault and it's not the public's fault that an interpreter wasn't found that could stick with the case long enough and so forth. It was the judge's responsibility. The judge did the best that he or she could as they were trying, and the fact that it took a long time is because he was claiming he needed an obscure dialect. That's not the court system's fault. I said to one of my kids, we were talking about the issue, I said, imagine that this defendant, instead of speaking a strange dialect, spoke the language of a country that tomorrow morning just fell off the planet somehow. Yeah. It just, you know, blew up and went away. So nobody in the whole world now speaks that strange language. Does that mean he gets to commit crimes with impunity for the rest of his life? I think not.
Exactly.
You know, the court system has a way, and it always should have a way, to make people who don't speak English bend to the needs of the legal system, which is a predominantly English-speaking institution.
Your book's coming out, Injustice for Some. You see John and Mary, six-pack, that are living at home. I don't know why I always say six-pack, but what the hell. They're watching TV. They're listening to this interview. They're reading your book. How do the public perceive this and understand this? They see someone with 9 counts of rape and sex abuse charges that are dismissed, basically opened up the door and let them walk out.
Yep.
How do the public react to something like this without coming out with a vigilante style of mentality that, if the courts aren't going to deal with them, then we'll deal with them? That's a huge problem. And how do you deal with that in your book, Wendy?
Well, good question. I don't at all promote or support vigilantism. It's not civilized. You know, the one thing law does for us, and it's supposed to do it better than it does, is encourage us to treat each other with civility, and that's a good thing, and that's why I love my profession, and I love the law so much. It's why I wrote the book, to point out the ways that the law is behaving in such an uncivilized and unjust and unfair manner, not even trying in many cases to promote the truth, but rather to distort it, and literally leading to the results like this guy walking out of the door with not even any restraint. I mean, we know, because there's DNA evidence in this guy's case, how strong the case is. He's entitled to a fair trial, but let's be honest, there's a strong case that this is a bad guy doing very bad things to very little children, and he doesn't even have any restraints over him right now. He can be near children all day long whenever he wants. Well, when a case like that happens and the public scratches its head and says, this is what the legal system is allowing, this is how our law works,
exactly,
this is how our law works, then the law doesn't work, and I'm going to take matters into my own hands. It's why parents sometimes say, I'm not even going to call the police, I'm not going to participate in the criminal justice system, I'm going to take matters into my own hands. I don't recommend it, but when you start to hear people expressing that sentiment, it's time to fix the system. And that's the message in my book. Over and over again, the message in my book is people are so angry. It's why we're starting to hear what looks like vigilante justice going on. Now, there's nothing wrong with being angry with the system, speaking out, criticizing courts, criticizing judges, complaining about these kinds of crazy results. What you can't do is take action. Just because we hate this guy and we're mad at him for what he did and we think he scammed the system, you still can't beat him up. You can't hit him in the head with a bat. And you can't throw rocks at his house. You still have to abide the law, but you have to make your voices heard. You have to express why your discontent is so intense. And that's what's good about, frankly, 24/7 news coverage. We're finally providing some oversight for these injustices that, until we had cable news, for the most part, went unnoticed.
We've got about 4 minutes left, Wendy, and one aspect of this in these types of cases is the aspect of the victim, and the victim now being terrified to come forward again because of the way, or to come forward, period, because of the way that he or she saw this case handled, where, again, they just walk out for some kind of a dopey reason. How do we protect the victim from the judges and the lawyers that let these kind of guys go free?
Well, that's a big question. I mean, what, the nature of my work is that I'm always trying to empower victims and make them fierce in their pursuit of justice. And the sad truth is, Dana, very often victims will say, I'm not sure I should bother. Right. I'm not sure I'm up for it. I don't want to get my butt kicked when I participate in the process and get on the stand and have the defense attorney accuse me of being responsible for my own victimization, which is a ridiculous claim, but we see it time and again. You don't want people who've already suffered violence at the hands of others to then say, I don't want to testify in a court of law because I don't want to suffer again in the name of justice. But that's the nature of our system. So my dilemma is that I'm awfully critical of the system, and I think it's appropriate and fair. My book goes into it in some detail using real-world examples of all the dirty tricks that lawyers play, that judges engage in, that lead to grave injustices. I want those to be exposed, but I also want to say to victims, just because these horrible things are happening doesn't mean you should walk away. You should be angry. You should learn the tricks of the trade. Hey, you should try your own tricks sometimes. And I have a lot of that stuff in there, ways of giving victims their own strategies to not only fight back against the unfair things that happen, but to be proactive, to, you know, insulate themselves from being harmed in the system. Because there's no way the message in my book is going to come out, be so afraid of the system you should run away, never report, you know, don't call police, don't testify. That's letting the bad guys win, and we can't have that. But what we can do is work together, mobilize together, work together politically to talk openly about what the systemic problems look like, and to strategize together about how to be better than that, how to anticipate the problems, how to prevent them from happening in the first place. Literally, take back our courts. That's the message in my book. We got to take back our courts. And I think, an awful lot of good people out there are saying, I want to help. What can I do? My book puts a lot of good stuff right there in plain English for everybody to know.
Absolutely. And the title is And Justice for Some. It wins the Title of the Year award in my books. Wendy,
it doesn't come out till September 6th, though. So you can buy it on Amazon.com, but it doesn't come out till September 6th.
Yep. And we'll have you back on again to talk more about it. Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks, Dana. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Wendy Murphy, author of the new book, And Justice for Some. We'll be right back with Al Garza. He's the National Executive Director of the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps. You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Al Garza is the National Executive Director of the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps. He has previously served as a Texas State Director for the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps before being promoted to second-in-command. He's a fifth-generation descendant of legal immigrants, and today he's here to talk about the border fence and the law that's been passed, and I want to talk to him a little bit about the two Border Patrol agents, and it's always a pleasure to have anyone from the Minutemen here on the program. Hi, Al. How are you?
I'm doing great, Dana. Thanks for the invite, buddy.
Nice to have you on the program. You guys are always welcome. I've had Carmen on the show four or five times, and she's always a hoot to have on here. Let's talk about, before we get into the bill that deals with the fence, let's talk about these two Border Patrol agents. I've covered this several times, too. What's the latest? We're hearing that the government may finally come forward and do the right thing here.
Yeah, they are. In fact, they have no other choice, Dana. Quite frankly, we've been chasing this case around for quite some time now. We found some discrepancies, Trump charges, fabricated evidence. I mean, it's all there. I've done some investigation in my life, so this is really nothing new for me. And so when it's all said and done, the bottom line is the Judiciary Committee is doing a fabulous job, and they found out a lot of things. For example, how the Mexican government is involved in not only this particular prosecution, but generally speaking, most of them, in fact, probably all of them, where they have been very pushy about demanding prosecution of anyone that gets involved or in between Mexico and America, in this particular case, border agents. So the bottom line, again, is the fact that these people are are pushing illegal immigrants to our land, and we finally figured it out. And at this point in time, the Congress is fighting for it, and we're going to win this case.
Absolutely. And these two Border Patrol agents and all the Border Patrol agents, including you guys down there, are putting your lives on the line to protect the sovereignty of North America, so to speak. And this garbage that keeps coming across the border on a daily basis is putting us all in danger. And for what these Border Patrol agents, this is the bizarre part, Al, is what they get paid, first of all. You know, we all do our jobs because, A, we love them. But the bottom line is we look at the money that we can put in the bank and that we can pay our bills with and support our families with. Well, there's no money on earth that will compensate these two Border Patrol agents because of the job that they've done. For a dirtbag drug dealer who's bringing in $1 million worth of pot into the United States, who says he was unarmed, and I will say bullcrap to that all day, every day. And these two guys are serving time in jail, have been beaten, and they deserve to be compensated. Your thoughts?
Oh, I totally agree with you, Dan. As a matter of fact, in addition to what you're saying, I know a little bit more about the case. I've been, as I said, I've been kind of following this case from its inception. They claim that this guy, or he claimed, in fact, Davila claims that he didn't have a weapon. He also claimed that he was a novice. He's a liar. And I'll tell you why I know he's a liar. Number one, even without being any part of the investigation, I can tell you this. The drug cartels, number one, would not hire a novice to take a van full of dope across the border.
Exactly.
And you're talking about $1 million worth of narcotics. They wouldn't have hired him if he wasn't a seasoned drug dealer and pusher and trafficker. Two, any drug cartel or anyone that's going to hire anyone to go out and do this kind of work, the first thing they're going to demand is, first off, you're not a novice, and secondly, if you are going to go out there and do this, you're going to carry an arm.
Yep.
Now, these two seasoned Border Patrol knew exactly what was going on. They had no idea. They hadn't seen this guy, but they connected. Number one, they connected the scene. They connected the drug smuggler, and they connected the van. They also connected a weapon. When it's all said and done, these guys were pros and knew exactly what they were doing. Then you got the likes of Sutton coming and attacking these two individuals, going after them, chasing them around, getting a testimony from a liar,
yep,
giving him immunity in exchange for the testimony. The rest is all history. Again, it's a question of the Mexican consulate, the drug cartels, and this piece of garbage, to be quite frank with you, this liar. They put these two guys in prison, and then one of them gets beat up.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
This
just,
is insane.
Yeah, it's just it's heartbreaking to hear the story. And again, I commend you guys and everyone that has fought so hard to win their release. Let's talk about this new border fence bill, Al.
Well, you know, they've been talking about fencing. They've been talking about amnesty since I can remember. I graduated in 1965, and even prior to that, they were talking about border security. They mean in our government.
Right.
Back in the early 60s. In fact, if I remember correctly, back in the early 50s, for that matter. Well, now nothing was ever done about border security. And in 1965, they talked about the same thing. 1967, I believe, they talked about border security, a fence, a wall. They talked about amnesty. And, of course, all we got was amnesty. 1986, they talked about the same thing. Border security, a fence, a wall, some kind of monitor, some kind of sonars, cameras, lighting. Well, the only thing that came out of that was amnesty. Then 2007, we're talking about the same thing. We're talking about a trigger for this and a trigger for that. The bottom line, it was amnesty. Well, we've been pushing a fence. Number one, we as Minutemen have got one going in the Naco area. Now, the Duncan Hunter, by the way, and I'm pretty sure you're already familiar with this, he
yes.
has been very successful with his fence and his wall. That has, I believe he said, it deflected 90%. Of the illegal immigrants as well as the druggies that are coming through. The bottom line again, while we're talking about here, the fence, this border security fence, we have pushed so hard that now at this point in time, I know for a fact this administration does not want anything to do with that border fence, but they got no choice now. They know they've been cornered. It's going to go through. They can talk about amnesties all they want. The only thing that's going to come out of this is two things. One is that we have demanded the wall. The fence is going to go up. And two, illegal immigrants are going to have a rude awakening because immigration law is going to be enforced. You take care of those two, the rest is going to take care of itself.
Yeah, how true is that? Enforce the laws that are on the books and the rest will look after itself. But yet we seem to have politicians and mayors, some police chiefs, sadly, that seem to have their own interpretation of the law. How much has that hurt this whole process? And now with 2008 coming up in the United States and all the candidates, I'll use the term running their mouths and talking, they seem to be able to talk the talk, but will they be able to walk the walk when it comes to protecting the border?
I think some of them will, Dana, to be quite honest with you. I think a lot of them are convinced that without border security and without enforcement of immigration law, and in fact, further than that, if you do not apply the law against people that are hiring illegal immigrants, they know for a fact that we're going to suffer the consequences, such as the case today. We are suffering as a result of the impact of illegal immigration. We're suffering the impact of the drugs that are coming through. It's virtually wide open. And then, of course, a lot of these congressmen, senators, as well as our own president, they deny the fact that we have not been infiltrated by the Middle East, people that want to cause us harm. That is really totally insane. If I was in combat, and the first thing I would do, I would find the weakest point. What's the weakest point? The 2,000-mile spread between Texas and California. That would be the weakest point. So that's where I would pursue, and that's where I would enter. They're already here, and they're still not doing anything about it. They probably want us to get hit again so that we can wind up in some kind of a crazy war within our own perimeters. Well, that's not going to happen because we are going to definitely push this fence. We don't have that fence, and we don't have enforcement of our laws. Our sovereignty will be no longer.
Al, we hear a lot in the news of the National Guardsmen that were posted to the border now being pulled away. However, it seems like cable news is more interested in reporting the aspects of some Hollywood starlet that's been picked up for drunk driving rather than talking about the border security issues. What's the latest on the National Guardsmen at the border?
Well, they have, in fact, you're very, very accurate in what you just said, that they have pulled half of them out. In fact, we knew for a fact that if, in fact, we got any border security in terms of our National Guard, that they would do nothing. We have already had incursions. We've had people infiltrate into our soil, and the National Guard was ordered to retreat. And because of that order and the following of that order, they were given commendations, they were given the rah-rahs, they were given ceremonies and parties and whatnot. These are all facts. That only means to me, and by the way, you can... The flip side to this is the fact that these two border agents and more just like them are suffering the consequences and the wrath of this administration in prison. That only tells me one thing. That tells me that these congressmen, the Senate, and this administration, that are all together in terms of not securing the border, they've got a reason. That reason is real simple. NAFTA, CAFTA, and SHAFTA. Bottom line, they've got a superhighway that they want to spend all the way from Texas, all the way through in through the meat of the United States, terminating in Canada. This is what this is about. But on top of that, you're talking about illegal immigrants coming up here to be exploited, used as slaves, and our president still refuses to ensure us and our security. And I think this is not only political. I think this agenda, as you mentioned, this agenda is all about globalization.
It seems like, and window dressing by the administration to make it look like they're doing something, but when it comes right down to it, they're not. There are very few law enforcement stories that we do hear, but we have heard about Sheriff Joe Arpaio does work towards enforcing the law the best that he can. I'm curious your comments, Al, as far as what local law enforcement can do. We've had some deputy sheriffs that have been put on the line, just the same as these two Border Patrol agents, too, that are suffering because of doing their jobs. Let's talk about that.
Well, it's real simple. Number one, they do have the authority, and they're just they're being told not to have that authority, not to claim the authority, but they do. Congress passed a bill some time ago, and I forget, I'm not prepared to answer that in terms of exactly when, but they do have the virtual right as law enforcement officers. If they pull someone over and they suspect that this individual or individuals are in fact illegal immigrants, they already have the virtual right to enforce the law. The reason they've not done it, it's real simple. They don't want the ACLU breathing down their backs. They don't want La Raza, Mecha, LULAC, and all these anti-Americans breathing down their back. And they certainly don't want any lawsuits. Classic example would be, look at Hazleton. Everything's being done by virtue of their concerns. The mayor, Mayor Lou Barletta, I know him well. He's attempting to enforce the law. Who's breathing down his back? The Hispanic media, the Hispanic people with an agenda, and the ACLU. That's the reason. It's not because the laws don't exist. These people always find a way to get away from the law and to take our Constitution and turn it upside down. But that in itself is going to change also.
The government talked about trying to do something about frivolous lawsuits and the fear of intimidation of lawsuits, but that, like everything else, seems to have flown out the window and never returned, a carrier pigeon with a one-way destination. What's that doing to the whole process? Again, someone speaks out, including commentators like myself who may speak pro border security, and some will say that they want to gag us, the Rush Limbaughs, the Sean Hannitys, etc. What's happening there?
Well, I'll tell you what's happening. America has arisen. America has woken up, and they've said, now we've had enough. You know, at first it was only a select few and elite few that were standing up, such as the Minutemen, for example. We started this thing off a few years ago, and it was not a part of the entire nation as a whole on the radar screen, but it is today. And this is one big concern that these anti-Americans had. They wanted to quash everybody and seal that envelope, so to speak, so nobody knows about it, including tapping the media. That's going to be history. Now America has risen. The sleeping giant has taken the step and said, no more. We're not going to tolerate it. The law's not going to change. Laws are already in the books. We want the laws enforced. So these people now, ACLU, La Raza, and Mecha, they're not going to stand a chance. They can whoop and holler all they want. We're going to beat them to the draw. This is our country. We're fighting for it. We're going to stand tall, and we're going to regain everything that we've lost. Everything that they want from here on out, they're going to have to fight for.
What's next for the Minutemen Project? I know you guys are busy every day, 24-7, but what's next on your table? You've been working so hard.
Well, we've got a continuance of the border fence, which is not far from where I'm located. And I reside, by the way, here in Arizona, in Naco. We've got an extended, I believe, another 2 miles to go yet. We got that project. Obviously, we got our rallies. We're fighting vigorously to get Ramos and Campeón out of where they're at, and then working with their families. We've got we've got some people in Washington, D.C. as we speak. They're out there door knocking, and we're constantly doing something. We've got musters coming up. We're constantly, as you mentioned, we're constantly at the border, and we do this daily. And we are radio stations, you know, that have the bravery and the gall to stand up and let us go in there and say a few words, such as yourself. That's helping. So all in all, and we're recruiting a lot, by the way. So we're and I don't even know if I mentioned this, but if you go to our website, you may be familiar with it. But this is important for you as well as your listening audience, Dana. Mm-hmm. And that's Minuteman, MinuteMan. HQ.com. It's loaded with info, current events, anything and everything to do about illegal immigration. You'll find it in their website. Again, it's MinutemanHQ.com.
Absolutely. I go there all the time, and we talk about it on the program. Al Garza, National Executive Director of the Minutemen Project, thanks for coming on the show this evening.
It's a welcome to hear your voice, my friend. And call again, and we'll have a powwow.
We'll stay in touch, and say hi to Carmen for me.
I will do it, Dana. Thank you so much, partner.
Okay, buddy. Yep. Bye-bye. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back with Reza Joe, father of missing Donna Joe. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. I have Reza Joe with me. He is the father of a missing daughter. His daughter, Donna Joe, is missing. They're running into a little bit of a roadblock when it comes to getting the folks at Texas Equisearch to come and help and search for Donna. And I thought I'd bring Donna Joe's dad on, Reza, to the program on our missing persons segment to talk about this. Good evening, sir.
Yes, this Mr. Burgess, the convicted sex offender, has taken my daughter over a month ago in Los Angeles, California. His mother has helped hiding him.
And the
Jacksonville, Florida.
How have the Los Angeles police and the Florida police been helping you, or have they been hindering the search for your daughter, sir?
Well, I have been trying to convince California authorities in two things. One of them, to expedite this man from Jacksonville to California for questioning. The other one is to convince them that let EchoSearch start their search. So I've been trying to do these two things, and I didn't have much success. Then I talked to Congressman Nick Lamson, and the congressman has stepped in and trying to help. He has convinced the authorities in California to allow EchoSearch to go and do their work.
When will they be going to do their work, sir?
Well, they told me that sometimes by no later than early next week, they're going to be in California and start searching for my daughter.
Tell us, sir, when your daughter went missing.
Well, my daughter missing since June 23rd. And there was a man that came pick her up, and he has misrepresented him and said, well, I am going to pick you up, and my daughter is supposed to go to her friend. And this man came and said, well, I'm taking you there. So my daughter went there, then was a party there. Her girlfriend never showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Then she never came back home, and there is no trace of her since June, since the evening of June 23rd.
Now, is it unusual for your daughter not to have made contact with anyone in this period of time? She would contact you regularly and not go so long without getting a hold of you?
Yes, sir, because we are very family-oriented people. My daughter used to call me every night. With no exception, we would talk as a minimum 1 hour about what she has done during the day, what she had for lunch, what she had for breakfast, what she had for dinner, what homework she has tomorrow, if she has any tests or any studying for tonight.
Right.
Then finally she told me good night, and I went to bed here. And now I really am terrified because I haven't heard her for 39 days. And it just is very devastating for us.
Have you heard anything from Governor Schwarzenegger of the from California as far as extradition?
Well, I did send a message to him, and I asked for support. But it is sort of a complicated. He has said he's going to look into it, but I have not seen anything in action yet. But I think he's very interested to help. But maybe pretty soon he do something about it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and I'm glad to hear that Texas EchoSearch will be able to start searching. Their fine organization, and if anyone can help, they can. Reza, I let you go. I know you're not feeling well this evening, and I can tell you from the bottom of my heart and my listeners that we hope and pray that you'll get some answers soon.
Well, I appreciate it very much. I want to ask the public to help me to find my daughter.
Okay, and we'll do what we can, and we'll stay in contact with you. And I'll speak to Michelle again later about having another show soon.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your support.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Have a good night.
And again, that's a missing person, Donna Zhou. It's a sad case for sure. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. Don't forget our new webpage at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. That's www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. I want to thank my guests this evening, life coach Devlin Steele, author, lawyer, DA, and I call her super mom, Wendy Murphy, Al Garza, who is the national director of the Minuteman Project, and Reza Zhou, who's looking for his daughter, Donna. Thanks for listening. Again, check out the webpage at scaredmonkeysradio.com for my daily commentaries, podcasts of past shows, and we'll see you again real soon.